Welcome to the latest edition of the Church of England Weekly Podcast. This week, we hear from a soldier who swapped the front line for a new role based in the Diocese of Durham.
I would say that my first concept that God existed, that I was one of his, that I was loved, was what really hit me.
A bell ringer from Sussex diagnosed with leukaemia is organising a national bell ringing event to help raise awareness of blood cancer.
Start ringing at Y, and then we would go to Chilham, we'd ring there, and then we'd go to Chartham, ring there, and then we'd walk into Canterbury and ring at Canterbury Cathedral on the 12 historic bells there. But it's got so much bigger.
And a former head teacher talks about a pilot scheme to help tackle conflict in schools.
What I didn't realise was that it was actually going to stop the conflict happening in the first place. So by behaving restoratively, you're actually helping people to think about their relationships with each other and think about their actions.
Rachel Phillips served as an army engineer for 13 years, being deployed in war zones such as Afghanistan and Bosnia. She now works as a generous giving project officer for the Diocese of Durham, a role which encourages a culture of generous giving and communicates what Christian stewardship can look like in the diocese. Whilst serving in Afghanistan, Rachel attended a service at her base. She goes on to talk about that particular day.
I had no interest whatsoever really in what faith might mean to me or any concept that God was in my life. And one day I was in Afghanistan on my second tour. I was serving in Helmand province in a small outpost. And it had been a pretty challenging day. As far as soldiering goes, we'd had a few casualties and that had been quite difficult to deal with, quite upsetting. And my grandmother had recently died, so just a few weeks before I deployed. So I think I was probably not in the happiest frame of mind, which is possibly what led me to go along when I heard an announcement on the tannoy system from our padre, our army chaplain, who happened to be in our patrol base, and he sent a message out saying, to anyone of all faiths or none, you're very welcome to come to an evening service. And possibly because I was feeling a little bit upset for the first time ever, I thought, do you know what, I think I might go along. I don't really know what it was exactly that made me walk in, but I saw there was a few candles lit in an empty shipping container, which we call an ISO container. And I found myself going along and standing pretty far to the back, not quite getting in across the threshold and sitting down with the other Christians. But that's the first time that I went along. That's the first time, really, that I would say I understood the message of God.
And in terms of kind of making a decision to say, actually, yes, I think this might be for me, was there a moment or was it a gradual thing? How did that kind of present itself?
I would say that my first concept that God existed, that I was one of his, that I was loved, was what really hit me. And when you go from not believing in God and not believing that God made the whole world and everything in it, to a moment of thinking, crikey, yes, he did. It was just, it completely blew me away. And I would say that that was like a really big moment of feeling quite frightened, quite upset, overwhelmed, joyful, you know, every emotion in between, and a few tears along the way. But actually becoming a Christian and accepting the Christian faith, I would say, yes, it was a gradual thing. I was taken under the wing of one of our padres, a wonderful man called Robin Richardson, and he then explained the story of Christ, who Jesus is, and he explained that to me over a period of months, and then he handed me over to the next padre, because I was staying in Afghanistan for an extended period, so I kind of got handed over as this bright-eyed new Christian to the next padre. And, yeah, I learned about faith and about Christianity and what it means to be a Christian quite gradually. And it wasn't until a year after that I felt that I was ready to make a really big commitment. And that's when I chose to be confirmed.
Are there any parallels that you can draw between your service while you're in Afghanistan and what you're going to be doing in the Diocese of Durham from now?
I think there are a lot of parallels I can draw from serving in the particular job that I did in Afghanistan and the job I'm doing now, because the job I did required me to go out to visit villages, to visit the local leadership, whoever they may be. Sometimes it was teachers, sometimes it was the local mayor or the chief of police or religious leaders. I would go and I would meet them and we'd have lots of cups of tea and we'd sit around in a circle and we'd talk about the needs of the villagers and their concerns and what they thought of the British forces working in their area. And it acted as a kind of bridge between the British forces and the locals. And I'd feed back everything I understood about the dynamics of that town or that village back to my commander. So in a very similar way, that's what I'm doing. I'm going out to visit parishes, to visit area deans and to hear about the concerns or the particular local dynamics of that location. And I'm learning, I'm listening, and I'm hearing what the people in those parishes think. And the only difference is the message that I'm delivering. Instead of explaining what the British Army do, I'm explaining the really important part of our Christian faith, which is giving. So I'm helping. I'm trying to understand what people's concept of that is at the moment, and then trying to work out with them and with their leaders how we might build on that.
And so, after spending so many years away, what are you most looking forward to when you're back in the area that you grew up and kind of getting back to your roots?
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic that I'm back in the Northeast. Being back home, just being able to wake up every day in Darlington and drive. I think it's the first time I've ever enjoyed my drive to work. I drive to Durham every day, and then my job takes me out in the daytimes and evenings and some weekends, travelling all over the diocese and meeting people all around, whether it be up in Gateshead or Sunderland or Barnard Castle, just getting the full breadth of the diocese and meeting the local people here. It's great to be home, great to be amongst sort of people who I understand, people who I grew up with, despite my lack of regional accent. It's a real joy to be back in the place that I grew up.
And how do you feel that your new faith has changed your perspective on life?
I think there's been some quite fundamental changes on some levels, and in other ways I might appear the same as I used to be. I think the biggest concern for my friends and families when I told them that I had become a Christian was that they all thought I'd become a massive bore. They had a really narrow view of what Christians were like. And so I've been trying to explain that, those two things do not go hand in hand. And Christians are wonderful, ordinary people. And it doesn't mean that you come from this kind of background or not. That's the beauty of being loved by Jesus, is that it's for everybody. And I think that, trying to explain to people that I hadn't changed in some ways, and, I wasn't going to lose my sense of humour just because I had become religious, which was what some people were concerned about. But, of course, I have changed massively. And I don't think you can become a Christian and understand about God's love and what's required of us as Christians without changing. I think you'd totally miss the point if you felt that you hadn't changed. So for me, I'd say the thing that's changed about me the most is my patience and compassion for other people. I think I probably used to kid myself into thinking that I was a really nice person. I'd have time for anyone and I'd be nice to these people and nice to those people. But I think that there were still people who fell outside of that bracket. I probably still surrounded myself around people who I found interesting and made me laugh and were people who I had a lot in common with. But what I now know, and that's the beauty of Christianity, is that we're all equal in the eyes of God, rather. And now that I know that I'm equal to everybody else, it's quite liberating, because it stops you from thinking, well, I don't really want to talk to you, or I'd rather walk past you, or you're different to me, and I don't think we're going to get on. So fundamentally, that change in my level of compassion for people who are different and my patience with people and giving people time that they deserve, I think that's been the biggest change for me.
To read more about what Rachel is up to, log on to her blog online at www.thegenerousgivingproject.wordpress.com. Julie McDonnell has organised a national bell ringing event taking place on the 25th of June this year to help fund vital research and give other blood cancer sufferers a chance of life. The aim is to raise £100,000 and to add 1,000 potential stem cell donors to the Anthony Nolan and other associated registers. Julie underwent stem cell treatment for her leukemia in December last year and spoke about her story so far.
Well, I actually have leukemia. I have CML, which was actually diagnosed in June of last year, 2015. I actually came out of remission because I've had leukemia twice in my lifetime. But each time I went into remission, in June I became ill, and obviously I went to the doctor. It found out quite quickly that I had CML. And unfortunately, it was a very bad strain, and I was I was about to get married anyway, later on in the year. So we advised that really we should be getting married pretty quickly. So a few weeks later, in July 17th last year, I married my husband at Breed Church, where I attend worship. We got married on the Friday, and on the Monday I started aggressive treatment. And, you know, I tried to be very positive about it, but unfortunately my treatment didn't work, and we went to the consultant in December, the first week in December of 2015, and unfortunately my husband and I were told that I was terminally ill, and really there was no further chemotherapy treatment as such, and obviously it was a huge shock, not just because it's just before Christmas, but you know, I'm actually 48 years old, and it doesn't seem, it's such a thing when somebody says to you, you know, you've got weeks to live. Now, we had a telephone call to say a match had been found for me, for stem cell transplant. And I was completely numb when I got the telephone call because we wasn't expecting it. And it was, you know, it was a chance of life. And although it was daunting at the time, I had the transplant straight away. I do go to church and I do have faith, but to be given that chance of life was absolutely incredible. And my husband and I, over that week, we kept thinking, what could we do to say thank you? Although it's not given that it's going to be a success. So 6 days later, we organised that I would ring a peal, which is 3 hours long, on the church bells at Bexhill, which happens to be in East Sussex. And we raised money for the Anthony Nolan Trust, to whom we're extremely grateful. We remain, you know, being grateful. So over the Christmas period, after we'd done this peal and we had raised the awareness of the Anthony Nolan Register, we wondered what else could we actually do, because actually it was arranged very hurriedly and we felt that we could actually do more, and hence we decided to create this event, which started off that I was only hoping that 10 cathedrals would ring in the UK whilst we did a sponsored walk from Wye in Kent to Canterbury Cathedral. The idea was that we would start a walk off at Wye, we would ring at churches along the way, the Pilgrim's Way, the historic Pilgrim's Way to Canterbury. We would start ringing at Wye, and then we would go to Chilham, we'd ring there, and then we'd go to Chartham, ring there, and then we'd walk into Canterbury and ring at Canterbury Cathedral on the 12 historic bells there. But it's got so much bigger. You know, we have cathedrals right across the world ringing for this event, from New Zealand Cathedral, Wellington rather, all the way across the world, going to Australia, Cape Town and Grahamstown in South Africa, going all the way across the UK, where we have up to 20 cathedrals at the moment, although there's more to be confirmed, across Ireland, all the way across the USA, Barbados, believe it or not, and ending up in Hawaii. And it's absolutely incredible. And it's, as I say, it's not a religious event, although I might attend church. This is just an event for unity to try and raise the awareness of the 137 blood cancers that exist, to please say to people that, you know, I've been given the chance of life. And it's so simple to give stem cells. All you do is, it's like a blood transfusion. You give half a day to potentially save somebody's life. 9 out of 10 people will give stem cells via a blood transfusion. 1 in 10 will still have the traditional bone marrow removed from their spine. It's so easy, and I can't tell you what it was like for my husband and myself to be given that opportunity of life. And if this event can reach over 1,000 potential donors, to either go to the Anthony Nolan website to sign up. If you're between 18 and 30, please go onto their website. If you're not between 18 and 30, you can sign up to Delete Cancer. You can be between 17 and 55. And what they'll do is you'll they'll ask a few questions online. Simple, it takes 4 minutes. My husband's just done this and gone on to Delete Cancer. He's 54 years old. And what they'll do is send you a spit kit. It's an unfortunate term, but it's a swab kit in the post. You send it back to them, and based on the results, you'll be go on to either register. If you're lucky enough that you match somebody, and you're lucky enough to give the chance of life to somebody else, I can't think of anything that you can do in life that's a greater gift. So, in an essence, that's what we're trying to do.
You've mentioned there about obviously going online and registering to donate stem cells and to be part of that. Is there anything else people can do to support you and the others that are going to be taking part on this walk on the 25th of June?
Yes, of course. I mean, without valuable funding, neither organisation or any of the organisations, and we're doing this for Anthony Nolan, and we're also doing this for Bloodwise. You might not have heard of Bloodwise, but they're the actual body that lobby the government, and they support sufferers of the 137 different blood cancers out there, and they can only do that through funding. So obviously, what I would be saying is I need sponsors. I need any form of funding whatsoever. If there's a lovely company out there that would like to sponsor us, that'd be fantastic. If there was somebody that wants to give a pound, every single pound goes towards the research, that'd be absolutely fabulous. So if you do want to sponsor us, there is a website that's been set up for this. You can just go onto our website and literally it links onto our Virgin Giving page. If you also, aside from, if you want to walk with us, you know, if you live in East Sussex or Kent, then please come and walk with us. You know, you can get a sponsor form from us, and it hopefully it'll be a lovely day as it is today. We actually have a sponsored double-decker bus from Hastings, and the old traditional type, and actually going from Hastings to Wye for anybody that wants to join us. It's only 14.5 miles. You know, maybe some people think, oh, that's a long way to walk. Well, that's fine. We've got transportation for the day anyway, even if you just want to join us. But what I would say also, this is so unique. It's the first time in the history of the church that the bells have rung out in unity across the UK, certainly not across the world. That is unique for anything that's not really being a royal event or a victory event or something like that. So please, if there is a church tower out there, a bell ringer that's listening to this, and I'd be surprised if you've not heard about it now, because I've been very persistent throughout all the different societies and guilds of bell ringers. Please, if you can just ring for us on the 25th of June, or even the Friday the 24th or the Sunday the 26th, please go to your tower, talk to your band and say, can we do a call to Peel to ring out in unity for us? Or even if it was a touch, and trust me, bell ringers will know what that means, or simply ring for us. If you can contact us via our website also, because there is a link to Bellboard, which is part of the ringing world, where we put an acknowledgement that we've rung a call to Peel. But that would be fabulous, so we can actually, you know, on the actual day, we can mention yourself. But that would be fabulous if, you know, there are more ringers and towers out there. Because the more towers that ring out in unity, the more likely it is to attract donors and funds, because really it's about saving lives. And as I say, it's not a religious event. It's simply other people helping others, because, you know, there's a lot of different cancers out there that affects a lot of people, and one in three people in the UK at any time will have cancer. And really, I don't think there'll be a single human being in the world that doesn't know somebody with cancer right now. So it's an easy way to help, half a day of your life just to help another human being. Even if you've got a condition that you can't actually be a donor, I'm sure there's people that you know that are not aware that it's so easy to give your stem cells. I mean, people give blood all the time. I actually contacted Glastonbury, because Glastonbury is actually the weekend of our event. And I spoke to the organiser there, and I said, could we please have people come down to give an awareness of the Anthony Nolan and Bloodwise? And actually, they do have the blood drive people there for the first time at Glastonbury. And next year, we have been invited. I was also asked, could I ring bells on one of their stages as well? But, you know, if you know anybody out there that might be suitable, 18 to 30 is the ideal age for Anthony Nolan. But as I say, my husband is a young man of 54, and he has just signed up to Delete Cancer. So, you know, if you can sign up, that's great. If not, if you know somebody else. And I think in the past, particularly when I had leukemia many years ago, when you had a bone marrow transplant, it was quite invasive of the person that actually donated their bone marrow. But through research, through the wonderful funds that people have actually given in the past, the research has moved on, and it's so much easier to save the lives of other people.
To find out how to give and get involved, make sure that you visit www.juliedmcdonnell.wix.com/strikeback. That's www.juliedmcdonnell.wix.com/strikeback. Finally this week, Judith Finney, a former head teacher at a Church of England primary school, has helped organise the rollout of a pilot scheme she developed based around conflict resolution. The restorative justice event took place at Salisbury Cathedral on the 25th of May. Judith, you were a head teacher for around 18 years up until last summer, when you attempted to retire but were brought in by Salisbury Diocese to help out with an initiative that you had started all about restorative justice. Can you tell us a bit about what the initiative's about, how it works?
Well, I was trained very many years ago when I was a head teacher in the early stages of restorative justice. And I implemented it in my own school to resolve conflict. What I didn't realise was that it was actually going to stop the conflict happening in the first place. So by behaving restoratively, you're actually helping people to think about their relationships with each other and think about their actions, so that actually conflict doesn't even occur. And I'd done one or two things within Salisbury Diocese based around it. And then when I retired in the summer, I became an advisor for Salisbury Diocese, not just based around restorative justice, but that is one of the main things I was asked to do, was to introduce restorative justice into the diocese. So we began with a pilot project of four schools at Christmas. And we've been, I suppose you could call it an action research project, to see the impact of introducing a restorative ethos into those schools.
You had an event at Salisbury Cathedral at the end of May with four schools that were piloting the initiative and the scheme. Can you share how that came about and what the outcomes were for the participants?
Well, we particularly wanted to bring the schools in the project together, but we wanted to give them an opportunity to actually get used to the initiative first themselves and see the impact on their day-to-day lives of operating restoratively, which of course fits beautifully with the Church of England ethos and with Christian values. And we felt the timing was about right to bring those schools together to share their experiences, and so they could hear from each other, and particularly from the children, what difference it had made to their schools. So one of my other roles within the diocese is to foster closer working relationships between the Board of Education and the Cathedral. So I worked with Sarah Ricketts, the Director for Learning and Outreach at Salisbury Cathedral, and we very much did this together in terms of creating a day where those schools could come together, and they were based around, in the morning sessions, they were taking part in restorative activities to do with social justice and Magna Carta. And then at lunchtime, we had a large number of VIPs arrive who all, in some way or another, had connections with restorative justice amongst the community and the wider county. And when the children presented, they did small presentations to showcase the effect of restorative justice on each of their schools. So it was lovely because each school could listen to other people's experiences, so they could all share that, and the staff also shared their experiences, and the VIPs listened to all of this. And then when the children went home at 2 o'clock, the VIPs stayed on, and we held an informal forum for comments on what they'd seen and where they thought that perhaps we could begin to join all these different initiatives up.
So it sounds like there's been a great deal of development throughout this kind of initiative, looking at ways to improve it and make it the best it can be. What happens next? Is it going to be rolled out elsewhere? How are you going to measure its success? Things like that.
Well, it's very exciting, actually, because the Crime Commissioner for Wiltshire, Angus McPherson, he's just appointed a restorative justice coordinator, because the aim is to make Wiltshire a restorative county. And so Inga Lowwater, the coordinator, has written a strategy, and now our initiative can become part of that strategy, which is aimed at bringing all of these different groups together so that we can have more impact. Obviously, it's great being in school because you've got a closed institution, so it's quite easy to bring a development into somewhere like that. Actually, to spread it out into the community is much more difficult. So part of what we were talking about with the VIPs yesterday was how are we going to join it up? And we decided that we would do it probably through the strategy. So there is a joined-up thinking. There are other parts of the country that are doing restorative justice, but it's the first time I've come across, well, I think I've made it up, actually, the restorative ethos, because restorative justice requires a lot of training and a lot of resources that, to be honest, we haven't got. So how could we do it more simply? So this is our simple version of restorative justice, but it seems to be being incredibly effective.
That's it for this week. You can find links to learn more about the stories included in the podcast by visiting our SoundCloud page, and make sure that you're following us on Twitter and like our Facebook page to stay up to date with news during the week. Thanks for listening.